Hey everyone, welcome to the cast. Today was actually a live episode, so there's definitely going to be a little bit more stumbling. We were live on Twitch, we referenced what was going on Twitch, so we apologize for that if you didn't get to listen to then. We will be doing that once a month, which will be the first recording of every month.
Quite honestly, if we reach the higher thresholds of the Patreon, which we might, you guys were awesome and have been helping us get there, we're going to start doing this more often, in which case it might just always be this way.
Yeah, it might always be live. It also will do video content eventually, a version of it. So like, yeah, donate to the Patreon. And speaking of Patreon things, one of the rewards is if you donate $10, you get to record a voice message that we'll play. And yeah. Since this is the first one, and because this person's deck also actually got chosen for today's subject matter, which was a deck tech.
Yeah.
And he's also a sweet kid
yeah.
named Noah.
Yep.
We're going to actually play this at the front of the episode before anything. This
yeah.
Other than me and Ben's voice, this will be the first one you hear all episode. Get ready for it.
My name is Noah. I'm in the fourth grade. I used to play Splinter Twin until Wizards banned it. Thanks, Obama.
Yeah, thanks, Obama.
I love
it. Banning Splinter Twin.
Yeah.
That was amazing. All right. Thanks, Noah, for listening. Thanks, Noah.
Thanks, Noah.
Yeah.
That was great. Thanks for listening to the podcast and for doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're awesome.
So get ready.
Yep.
Time for the episode.
See you guys.
We'll see you after the intro music.
In a second.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered. For you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? I'm tweeting out the link of our live podcast.
Yeah, so this is live.
The first time.
There are people on Twitch that can chat at us and listen to us while we're doing this and see what fools we can make out of ourselves.
Yeah, this is, we will be foolish. Now, we claim to do the podcast live every week. That's what we've been saying for a while. And we stopped doing edits, like, I don't know, 3 months ago or something.
I have, like, if we mess up in a grandiose kind of way,
like,
I'll record.
We did like seven. We've been on a run for a while where we like had zero mistakes. We were doing actual live casts. And I think last week we had like seven screw ups.
Yeah.
Something like that.
We're not gonna, yeah, that happened. So today, to do this thing, the podcast episode we're doing today, we're going to be talking about two things. We're going to talk about Shadows of Innistrad, just some predictions, which, you know, we got spoilers a little early, so we know a lot, but we have some predictions and our reactions and how we feel about what's about to come up. And then also we're going to do some deck doctoring episode stuff.
Yes, we promised when we started this Patreon to the fans of ours that decided they were going to donate a couple bucks or some more than that to our account that we would start doing these live streaming, first audio and then at a higher threshold video. And wouldn't you know it, our fans are the coolest in the world. So we hit it and now we're doing the first one live streaming audio. So that's happening. It's
yeah.
a thing that's happening right yeah. now and as a result of you guys.
And the two donators that got picked this week are Gabriel Charvet.
Yep.
Carvet. And
Charvet.
Oh, and I didn't copy the names, but
oh no,
look it up. And then a surprise one that we won't tell you until later after I look it up. So first off, let me just make sure to tell everyone that this was brought to you by our Patreon. People should donate to it.
Yeah,
there will be a link in the little bottom thing on the rocketjump.com website. If you're listening to this live, just go to patreon.com and search us.
Yeah, yeah. We should just point out that as we do every single week, this is a recent thing that we launched, our Patreon, and we are extremely, extremely thankful to those that did donate, and also that the reason we are asking for donations is because Kessler and I are a mom-and-pop operation. We do this ourselves. We edit ourselves. We don't have a producer or a video editor, and it helps us to give you guys more content if you do donate at those threshold levels. So basically, there's a few levels. $5 is kind of like the bread and butter level. It gets you deck tech submissions. We will then share them on the podcast as you're about to hear us do live.
Beyond that, also make sure to check out the Command Zone.
Yes, the Command Zone. That's our sister podcast. They do Commander content. Jimmy Wong, Josh Lee Kwai. They're super awesome.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's the thing. Pretty much the Patreon and that. And otherwise, we're here to just talk about...
Follow us on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. We have a Twitter. At the MMCast.
Yeah.
And
that's where we interact with most people.
Yeah, this is Kessler. You can follow him at Kess Wiley.
Yeah, you can.
And
that's where you can find me.
I'm Ben Bateman. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram. And also, if you happen to like action movies, you can check out my action movie podcast called Action Movie Anatomy on the Popcorn Talk Network. Tweet at me to find out more about it. Let's get into Magic Card stuff.
Sure. All right. So, Shadows of Innistrad.
Yeah.
This is sweet.
Yeah, I mean, like, from a flavor perspective, the original Innistrad was so much fun that it's really, really, really fun to see as they spoil, as they put out the spoilers for these new cards. Like, the flavor is just great. And somehow, I don't know, like, I guess logistically, the card design, the mechanics, lends itself really, really well to, like, horror, werewolf, zombies, like, that whole sort of trope. They, like, knocked it out of the park the first time. And it really kind of just seems like now coming back around to it, we're familiar and all the stuff they're adding just seems even more fun.
All of the emotions that I felt like I wanted to have for Battle for Zendikar and then didn't actually feel while we went back are like full force, all about what's happening on this set. Madness is back. Love Madness. It's like the exact type of stupid spiky mechanic that I love.
It's just great. Well, I think one of the things that makes Innistrad such an easy set to design is that when you take something like Zendikar, right, and it's like something like Zendikar that is, I guess Zendikar was like a place that was created in Magic lore, and it plays on some things that we know, but for the most part, like, you have to be into Magic and understand where it's coming from to initially react to things, where it's like,
sure,
zombies are zombies. They've been around forever. Vampires are vampires. They've been around forever. Like, these are things that have just always existed. Like, Halloween is every year, you know what I mean? We've all dressed up before, so it's much, much easier to design cards that are just, that feel like things to people when you are dealing with just the horror genre. It's much harder.
Well, yeah, but I mean, when we return the cons,
yeah,
I'm super excited. Okay. When we return the R2R, that was actually pretty exciting. Even Mirrored in Block had something sweet about it. I think Battle for Zendikar was so beloved partly because of, it's kind of like
Zendikar, you mean?
Sorry, yeah. Zendikar original was so beloved just because that's when a lot of people started playing Magic, including myself. Like, that was my first, like, pre-release I went to, like, really liked about Zendikar at the time. But in reality, Allies is kind of boring.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest Allies fan. Though I do think that bringing it back a second time
was necessary. I think you had to. But I think, like, that was such a staple thing. I think Eldrazi were cool, but they're also weird.
Yeah, and also a lot of the gameplay from Rise of Eldrazi as a set doesn't interact with the first two Zendikar sets very well.
Right.
Like, it's designed differently. So going back to this world, we all wanted Eldrazi to come back, but a lot of the things from Zendikar weren't actually as fun as Eldrazi, and people remember them as a block. So what I mean when I say this is, like, it's not that drawing on source material always works. As we've seen with Kamigawa, drawing from rich source material is not always the most successful. I mean, going, you know, Cons was based on, like, Mayan culture, isn't it?
Not at all.
What am I?
Cons is like Asia. It's like Chinese. You have Mongolians. You have Turkish guys.
Sorry, I said Mayan. I meant Mongolian. You have,
I mean, it's like India. Like, you have like six different, pretty much.
I mean, when I said Mayan, I meant Mongolian. That was full okay. Brain fart just now.
That was just the Mardu.
Yeah, and sure. then if you go to like Theros, that's like Greek mythology. That's like where you're.
Well, that was bladed. Like, Theros was a top down design set, where Cons was a bottom up. It was designed from a perspective of, we are creating a morph set with a time travel theme, and generally you're like, oh well, we're doing these factions, and like, oh well, Sarkon Vol is the guy from this planet, so let's make it about him, and he's Asian, so let's do Asian things.
What I'm saying is that the idea of, like, just designing a zombie is much easier for me, who, like, I don't really read into the story as much. And so going back to Innistrad, where I'm just like, okay, werewolves, this is really simple and cool. Like, these transform. They're human on one side, and then they're a monster on the other side. That's awesome. Like, that's really, really, really cool. And I think it's fun to design that way because those things lend themselves really well to Magic cards. So I'm stoked to be going back. I think it's great. And I think Clues and Investigate, I think it's really cool. I'm a big fan.
Like, every mechanic. Even Skulk, which is I'm pretty sure they're like plant for the new blue-black. I think Skulk will become evergreen if people like it enough.
Oh, I already kind of felt like Skulk to me feels like it's Menace already. Like, it feels like it's another Menace, and Menace is like super, super good as an evergreen mechanic.
Yeah, because it's basic. People understand they're already kind of using it. Skulk is another mechanic that they've kind of used recently more in green than blue-black, and I think it'll be blue-black Decidious or whatever in green. But
Skulk, like a Skulk Shadow Mage Infiltrator type, seems very, very obvious to be printed very soon, right? If that hasn't already been printed, maybe. No, I don't think it has.
I think so.
There'll be like a Skulk when it hits. You draw a card.
Yeah. And there'll be a Skulk when it hits. There'll be a Spectre, and there'll be the whole family.
You couldn't print black blue 2/1 Skulk when it connects. You draw, right? That's too good.
Yes.
It would have to be black blue 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could do that.
Probably. I think anything under 3 would be too good. All right. So Skulk, sweet. How do you feel about clues and investigate.
I love them. I think they're the coolest. Yeah. That's my favorite part. That's of all the designs in the new set, that's my favorite part so far. There's a few things that I think are awesome about it. Number one, I love things that have residual effects on other parts of design for Magic history. So Metalcraft and Affinity are both helped by the fact that you just get these living little artifact things on the table. I love things that are like little extras. So the idea that you could play a card, any card that's decent enough on its own that gets you a clue, is amazing, because like later in the game, just like having the ability to just draw a card is so fun.
Right. Well, I also think they're kind of in like where cantrips are kind of like a third of a card plus draw a card.
Right.
So these are kind of, you can be more of two thirds of a card plus investigate.
Yeah.
So you get like a weird different version of a cantrip.
Like the one that they spoiled today that I thought was really cool is like the 1/2 for one in white that gets you, that investigates.
Oh yeah.
Cause I'm just like, okay, like this makes sense to me. Like obviously I always think from two points of view. I always think,
does that mean a 1/2 for one draw card is probably too good?
Yes, but I also think that a 1/2 for one draw card is definitely percentage points better than this, but it's different. Because what this allows you to do is, this does add to Metalcraft, first of all, which sure, is really interesting. Means that for one mana, you're getting something that can hold a piece of equipment, which also plays into your Metalcraft theme. I don't know for Modern, honestly, if you can build around this card. It's probably too slow. But like,
I think that card specifically, but I could see Investigate being a card thing that works. Something that the thing I was going to say about Investigate that I really like, someone actually on the Twitch stream also brought up.
Oh man, there's 13 Sped people listening
13,
right now.
13, perfect timing. Sped 13,
13. Okay.
Contraptions. So you know the card Steamflogger Boss?
Of course.
So it Riggers. Assembles a contraption.
Yeah.
So that literally fits for what this is.
Right.
And on a different mechanic, and I'm thinking Regatha, back where Chandra's from.
Okay.
We have literally just Riggers are there because it's all artifact themed, but really you just have assemble, and whenever you assemble, it creates a contraption, and that contraption
right
is like a token artifact that's one mana to sack it, and it does 2 damage to target creature or player.
Right.
Or just some kind of damage effect like that.
I mean, from a standard point of view, I think that this makes... how long will this set...
But you're not freaking out enough. Like, the internet is freaking out that Steamflogger Boss makes sense now with a mechanical ability that's... that doesn't exist, but like...
Anybody who has ever listened to this podcast knows how much I love Future Sight and all the wonky Future Sight cards. I think I've probably talked about Steamflogger Boss on this podcast before. It would be hard for Steamflogger Boss to ever be good in Modern, no matter what they printed.
It depends what a Rigger... If Rigger is a tribe, it gives all... It's a Rigger Lord that also makes it so if these Riggers were making things, like theoretically, this is a pretty big beating by itself with like the second one.
Yeah.
Because now you have two... 4/4 hasty guys for 4. That's like not the worst thing on the planet.
Yeah, no, I get that.
And now they like also give you whatever a contraption ends up being.
Yeah, no, I mean, who knows what a contraption could end up being. I'm with you there. All I'm saying is I really, really like having these artifacts like float around on the table. I think it just makes things interesting for later in games and definitely opens up a little bit of design space. I think in Standard, when this set comes out with the new rules, will Origins rotate? When will Origins rotate?
Origin rotates when Dragons rotates, when the fall set comes out. Whatever the next set is.
Okay, so we get Origins with Shadows. We do?
Yeah, they will coincide together.
Okay.
So the Transform cool cards, like all the Transform Planeswalkers will exist simultaneously with all the Transform
and
werewolves.
So will Pia and Kira Nalar with Investigate, which is awesome.
Because, oh, that is cool.
Right?
I'll agree with that. Yeah.
I was just thinking how cool it's going to be to have like another just like artifacts on the
table. This is purely Standard, which is really interesting because we shouldn't be talking about that, but whatever. Yeah. We'll keep going. Shadowven, it's sweet. This is the most excited I've been for a set since... I guess Cons. Cons was sweet.
I mean, they also spoiled a card this morning that was nuts.
The 0/4?
Yeah.
Like what is it? Hidden in Ice?
Trapped Under Ice or something? That's a Metallica song. It's called...
I'm looking it up while you just
Encased in Ice, maybe?
Yeah, Encased in Ice.
Or something like that?
No, that's one of those Hate Bear Frost.
Yeah.
Taps whatever. Creature down.
Look it up.
I'm looking it up. You keep talking
one blue,
about it, how sick it is.
One blue, one colorless for a 0/4 creature that enters the battlefield with 4 ice counters on it. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, remove an ice counter from it. When it has 0 counters, flip it. And it flips into a 7/8 horror creature when it and when it transforms. No,
it's a horror. It's a horror kraken or kraken horror.
Yeah,
which is the best.
And when it transforms, you return all non-horror creatures to their owner's hands, which is
it is called Thing in the Ice.
Oh, that's even better.
And it transforms, and I'll find out in a second. But it's something that thing. Actually this podcast might not know. I don't know this, but like I think krakens was my first favorite tribe.
Really?
Yeah.
Krakens.
Yeah.
Release the kraken.
Yeah, because it was like I think I started playing Magic when that trailer came out, and it was right after Pirates 2 came out, which yeah. is before we all really. Realized how terrible those movies were.
Okay.
Like right around we started getting an inkling
of the so Pirates movies.
Inkling the octopus.
Wait, but but you can't call the first Pirates movie bad.
Yeah, I agree.
The first Pirates movie is great.
First one's wonderful. The second one
wonderful
is oh passable. And if there was another good one, it would yeah. be considered good. Kind of like how Return of the Jedi is considered good. And then the third one is just terrible.
Will this ever be playable now that we have Krakens?
No.
I'm showing Alex a picture of Deep Sea Kraken, the Suspend 9.
It's called Awoken Horror.
Okay. So
here's... It's also a Lovecraft reference. I don't know. Everything about this set is so cool. Did you know that Jaroff's masterpiece is made out of Grizzlebrand?
No.
If you look at the art, it has his arms and wings, and he has an opposite effect. So he's a 7/7, but he gets -1/-1 for every card in your hand.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
What I was going to say was that it's a horror, and another card that I love that we all know I love on this podcast is Hunted Horror, which is a great card.
Oh, someone
also Spellskite is a horror.
So which you're gonna do that
the horror deck
to everyone.
Well, here's the
me specifically.
The problem with this is you, as good as Spellskite is, there's no tribal support for horrors. So like you can't actually just like make a horror deck and get much out of it right now. Like I guess you could make your horrors uncounterable with Cavern of Souls, and you could like I don't think that that Hex Parasite is a horror, right? I mean, maybe it is. If a Hex Parasite's a horror, my head's going to explode right now. I'm looking it up.
Could you like manifest things with that hex, the other one, so you get your horrors without the hex proof manifest?
Yeah.
Because you also get the frost triggers, it just automatically will flip.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. I mean, you know that I'm into that.
And you get the hunted horror without the.
Yeah, because you know that I built that deck at one point.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's, oh my gosh. Cloud form. We're building the cloud form deck now. It also means.
It wasn't good, but this would be slightly better.
Well, yeah, it also means that like you can cloud form. It means that you can cloud form a Spellskite, even if that's what you hit, and that you then have a flying 2/6 hexproof creature that can redirect everything.
You can't redirect it.
No, it's
because it can only because it has hexproof. Target.
You can't make you only your own spells. Well, it's still.
Womp. I mean, you still get a 2/6 flyer, I guess.
Which is really difficult to kill,
and it blocks everything for day.
Yeah,
for days.
I mean, that doesn't seem the worst to me. I'm pretty entertained by this idea.
we're not going down this hole. All right, so.
Don't forget, guys, that you can just play Engineered Explosives in this deck.
So this is something. How do you feel about Archangel Avacyn? Because I love this card.
Okay, well, a couple things.
Sick.
It's a 4/4 flying creature for 5 that also has vigilance or does not have vigilance.
It's flying, vigilance, and flash.
And flash, and then it enters
the flash part. Yeah. That flash part.
When it enters the battlefield, all other creatures you control gain. All other non-angel creatures you control gain indestructible. Is that what it is?
Oh no! All the creatures you control gain indestructible. It's whenever a non-angel creature dies, you then flip it,
and it becomes like a 6/5 that deals 3 to everything.
6/5 to everything.
Yeah, it seems really good. It seems like a fun card. It seems like a bulk card for. It won't see any modern play. I don't think you can realistically play it in modern, but.
I disagree.
You think you can play it in modern?
Yeah.
Really?
It's a 5-drop. Oh, no, sorry. The 5-drop is its negative, but it comes in with flash and vigilance. Like, both of those things make it very hard for people to deal with. And if you transform it, I think it's a control card. I think this is a control finisher.
That's fine.
But how many flash 5-mana 4/4s, like, exist?
Flying or just in
general? Flying. Flying, vigilance, flash. I mean, that's a lot of specific things, but, like, just that's pretty legit. And this also, like... will sometimes just be a really good board wipe against Affinity, or...
I mean, okay, I'll give you an example of a card that is, like, worse, but, like, still interesting, and that's Hyksos Prison Warden from Origins. Never even was discussed
Flying is just so much better.
Okay, but this is also a card that, in an Alpha Strike, it blocks and then exiles
Vigilance
everything.
Vigilance is so much better. Like, the amount of things I can think that are better than that, for that reason this is better than that, off the top of my head. Evasion Vigilance is way better than a Ground Pounder that... exiles a few things.
I don't know. I mean, like, okay, like, it's way better. Don't get me wrong. Definitely, it's a much better card. Yep. But I'm saying, like...
It's also, like, eventually a 6/5. Like, everything... I'm No.
I don't think that, I'm just saying, Hyksos Ridden Warden is a card where, like, if you're playing that against aggro and they attack, you effectively exile their entire board with a thing that doesn't get lightning bolted. So, like, that's a reasonable thing to play on 5 and was never even, like, in the conversation.
All right, we actually shouldn't be doing card by cards when I think about it, because we're going to do that in our top 10s. But, all right, so, other thing I want to talk about, the Planeswalkers for the set.
Right, there's 3 that are confirmed.
So we got confirmed that
today. Like, who did that?
Blake PR.
Okay, yeah.
He confirmed Rasmussen. We're getting Soren, who's going to do something for the first time. We're going to talk about that in a second. We're getting Soren, Jace, who's the face of the set, and then the new Werewolf Planeswalker.
Right.
Who was probably a flip card. That's the other thing we got confirmed today, is that there was a uncommon card spoiled a while back.
Okay.
An uncommon common check sheet.
Right.
And it didn't say that on it, but it didn't have a legendary werewolf. It didn't have, like, all these things we were kind of expecting, and people are disappointed, and you know, whatever. Today was announced, and we kind of guessed this when we saw Addison, but there's actually going to be a mythic rare sheet.
Yeah.
So most likely, I'm guessing, we're getting that legendary werewolf.
They changed the flip card CMC rule, right? That was something they announced
today. They changed that, and they also changed that you can't have the flip trigger happen more than once.
Yeah.
So that wasn't something I think they allowed to happen with the original flip cards, but could happen with Jace.
Got it.
And so that's no longer a thing. They also made it so that if an ability would make something leave the battlefield when it flips, like the way Jace works, it doesn't come back.
Okay.
During the flip, if it's not a flip card.
Gotcha.
So, like, if you have a clone of Jace, don't try and draw a card on that fifth activation.
Got
with
it.
With their 5 cards, because they'll just exile it.
Interesting.
Mind you, at that point, it's kind of useless. I mean, I guess it's a 0/2 blocker, which is better than just a thing you killed.
Can we just talk for a second about how, like, hilarious it is now? Like, Was it you who texted me or somebody tweeted that, like, they were listening to our Origins review podcast, which I think is the only episode of the show that I wasn't on. I think
you weren't on that one.
There was 2 maybe since I came on the show that I missed. And that was one of them. And how Jace was, like, not in anyone's top 5. I think, like, I'm pretty sure we all had, like, Harbinger of the Tides as the best card in Origins. And, like, Jace was, like,
I mean, it's seen a lot of play. And in our defense, that was the safest bet.
Yeah, but, like,
and it was me and the professor, and the professor, like, is in love with Merfolk.
I think Harbinger is my number one card. I don't even think I put Jace in my top 10. Jace is very clearly an 11 out of 10, and every other card in Origins is, like, maybe there's another 10, like, probably not. Like,
Kieran and Pia Nilar are probably a 9 or 8 out of 10.
Card is very good. Jace is already, like, one of the best blue cards ever.
Sure. I think Jace is a 12.
Yeah. Jace is, like, totally absurd.
Just could have been a mistake where, like, Chandra and Nilar are, like, the exact type of 10. Level 10 card, I'd expect.
Pierre and Kieran's awesome.
Yeah,
card's really good. Card's really, really powerful, yeah.
All right, so on the Soren thing. So have you noticed, people on Twitch and people listening to this podcast right now, that Soren has never actually done anything once in any of the stories he's been a part of?
I would notice that if I paid attention to the stories.
He shows up in every plane, is like, oh, this is kind of bad, and then just leaves.
Gotcha.
He's never done. He's like the sad sack of the Magic universe.
He has to go to the Monster
Based off of the
mash.
Art that was spoiled. Spoiler alert. He kills Avacyn, apparently.
Oh.
There's art with him and then, like, what's her face? Moon girl? Tamiyo.
Tamiyo.
And Jace are like, oh, no. And he's like, oh, I'm a badass. And then Avacyn's dead behind him.
So,
which is weird art to spoil.
Here's a question for you.
Sure.
So Jace is in the trailer.
Yep.
And he's like, he's got that voice. He talks like this. Did you know, by the way, that I ever tell you that I auditioned for the part of Jace? Do you know this?
No. Really?
Yeah, so I had a friend that used to do marketing for Wizards. He's like head of marketing or something like that.
Okay.
I think he's over at Xbox now. I'm not quite sure, but he was there for a while, and he was a friend of my older brother's, and so I got to know him. And when they
because you're from Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
It was for, I believe, Return to Ravnica, maybe? That sounds about right. It's whichever one where the script was, this is my city.
So Tamiyo's not going to be the set. Tamiyo's going to be really quick. May interrupt you answering Twitch because we have live feed.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone said the Planeswalkers are going to be Tamiyo, Arlen, Soren, Nahiri, and Jace. Confirmed, Blake PR said that only the 3 are going to be in it. So we're not going to see Nahiri this set, probably the second one. And then most likely, and for sure, Liliana is the second one.
Gotcha.
We're getting 5. So Tamiyo is going to be kind of a how Ugin was in Battle for Zendikar. He's in all the card art but didn't do anything.
Didn't
show up as a card.
Yeah, I never much like Tommy anyway, but that's just me personally. But anyway,
okay. Continue your story about how you were almost Jace, but weren't.
The point was, it was whatever the art. I think it was for RTR, and it was like the one where the script was like, "This is my city, my home," or something like that. I think it's RTR.
That's RTR.
If you go look at it, it'll come up. Anyway, I did like 3 reads for it and like sent it in, and I didn't book it, but like it was just cracking me up today listening to the Innistrad trailer as Jace is talking and just being like, oh. interesting. He's like, this is like the voice. It's like kind of the same voice that I went for when I read for it in the first place. Anyhow, that whatever. So the trailer, you see Jace. What kind of Jace are they going to print? Is what I'm like. He's been.
I think we're going to get another 5 mana.
Is Jace the most? Is he the most printed planeswalker?
Yes. No. Currently.
Yeah.
Before we move on to this next set that's about to happen, him and Chandra are tied.
They're tied.
They're tied.
So interesting that Chandra. But
I actually like. I had this art. So Jace has been only the main character of one set, now two with this set.
Got it.
He was the main character of Return of Ravnica block, uh-huh. And now he's the main character of Shadow of Innistrad block.
Right.
He was also the main character of one other set.
Sure.
So he was the face of Worldwake.
Right.
But otherwise, all the other cards that were printed of him are core sets.
Got it.
So he just happens to just have been in every core set ever, and that's why people are like, oh, too much Jace. The problem with Jace,
because yeah.
Chandra's the same amount and no one's like whining about her, I guess some people are to a certain extent, but whatever, yeah. Is that Jace has had also the two most powerful planeswalkers ever.
Got it.
Other than, like, theoretically, Jace Prince Prodigy and Liliana the Veil are probably
on the same level.
On a similar level, but
Mind Sculptor.
Mind Sculptor. So, like, people, like, hate Jace for that reason. He's also relatively generic. Not that Chandra isn't. She's a fire mage that shoots fire. I like Chandra, though.
When they make the movies, when they do that, they're casting for Jace. Right, I'm going to, like,
try out.
Beat the door down to see if I can read this. Like, I'm just not, like, I don't even act anymore, really. Like, a little bit here and there. Things come up. Mostly, I just host.
I can see you. I can see you. You're, like, you have the look of a Jace, the Mind Sculptor.
The world.
Your eyes are blue.
And I'm pale.
Pale.
The worlds cross over a little bit, but, like, just because I love magic so much, I want to see if there's a chance that I could possibly play Jace. Maybe. Just maybe.
People also hate Jace because he's blue.
But blue's the best color in magic.
Is it because he's sad or is it because of all the
magic? I don't know.
Magic
anyway, you think it'll be another joke. 5 mana?
I'm going to leave.
We've had 2 5-mana Jaces, Living Guild Pact and...
We've had 1 5-mana Jace. The big one.
No, there's 2 of them.
Uh-uh. Living Guild Pact's a 4-drop. There's Living Guild Pact, which is the terrible one. There's Terrible Jace. There's Architect of Thought, which is the, like, service, like,
four
the Jace
one.
That Jace should be.
He's the 4-mana one.
There is Jace Prince Prodigy, that's too good.
Five mana aggro mill Jace, that's the one you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
0 mill 10.
Yeah, that's the only 5-drop one. That's why I think he might be a 5-drop here.
He's called, that one's called Jace Memory Adept. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I think we'll get a 5-mana Jace, and I think we'll get a Sorin that's 6 mana.
Okay. We've had 1 6-mana Sorin, the original.
Yeah, the original one.
Yeah.
But he'll be black white this time. I think Sorin will be black white, Nahiri will be white red. Nahiri's our new white red character.
Are they going to give us another 4-mana black white or a 5-mana black white?
That's
or
what I'm saying. I think
3-mana black white.
3-mana black white would be sick.
Yeah. What could they do with a 3-mana black white Sorin?
Each character gets a token, and then your tokens get bigger as a minus.
He couldn't protect himself, right? Or would he make a 0-1
no,
flying?
If both of you get 1-1 tokens, you'd make it double sided token giving. I don't know. That's a weird thing to do, but.
That'd be cool.
Your creatures get lifelink for a plus. Just a plus, all creatures gain life, like, and a minus, make a token vampire. That sounds so boring, actually. I want like a 6-mana one that's like, destroy every creature your opponent has, minus, and then like a plus of make a bunch of tokens. Like, just.
Okay, quickly on the subject of Jaces, just because I think it's interesting. I like lining them all up together, which I know people have done. So there are 6 Jaces, including Vryn's Prodigy, right? So the worst one by a mile is the M15 one, Living Guild Pact.
Yeah.
Why did they print Living Guild Pact? Look, top two cards would go in your graveyard. So
no, they
plus
needed to make
one
planeswalker for each of the one. They made a bad one because Jace needed a bad planeswalker. Let him be bad.
So the plus one on
how
a 4-mana card.
How many bad Chandras there are?
Yeah, but he's Jace. Okay, how do you design a 4-mana planeswalker whose plus one ability doesn't draw you a card? Like, and then the -3 is just like bounce something?
He's supposed
something?
To be a plant for Sultai and then it didn't get anywhere.
Got it. Yeah, it just like really.
He mills you. He like is a huge delve enabler that was unnecessary, and Jace Fern's Prodigy was better.
But every single other Jace is like very playable.
Every,
like,
single other Jace has seen play.
Yeah. I think Memory Adept actually is a little underrated. The card's kind of sweet.
I mean, it's been in top 8s and won Pro Tours because it's Jace, the Mind Sculptor.
And then Architect of Thought is actually pretty awesome.
Yeah. I think Architect of Thought was underplayed until new Jace came up, and you have competing Jace problems. I think Jace Bellerin is also underplayed in Modern.
Yeah, Bellerin's a great
card. Not anymore, because Jace Fringe Prodigy is just, I think, blatantly better.
Okay, here's a question for you. Now I'm just like sticking on so many questions. What would it take to print a 1-mana Jace? Just don't.
It would have to be hybrid black, green. It would have to tap exile land from a graveyard, produce a mana. It would have to get banned.
I know what you're doing here. Okay, but what if it was mono blue Jace?
Target player mills a card plus minus of target creature gets minus is one, minus one, zero.
It's a one loyalty planeswalker for one or something?
Sure. Plus one, target player mills a card.
One.
Card. Minus one. Target creature gets minus one, no, I minus, minus zero one until end of turn.
No, I think minus one draw card. So it's a cantrip on its own. That's what you use it as.
It's a cantrip. I like that. I think that's fine. And then minus like eight. Make it like the ultimate has to be. If you're gonna make a one mana planeswalker, the plus and minus abilities are gonna be so bad that you have to make the alt like extra worth it to get to.
Actually, could you actually make minus one draw a card and the plus one mill a card? Because it would mean it, on turn one you play for one blue a card that now draws you a card every other turn.
No, yeah, that'd be way too good.
You can't do that. That's way too good.
No, I think it'd be minus two.
Minus two draw a card.
I think plus one mill starts at one, so you plus one you can, or even like maybe you can cantrip, so it starts at two.
Plus one plus mill. One I think mill. You could plus one mill two. And so then you could buy, by the time that's you could good. Draw a
imagine
card.
That, like, that's like Hedge and Crab. Imagine that in my, no, there's no such thing
target as one opponent,
mana. This maybe? Is why Tybalt was so bad. It's impossible to print.
No.
Think about it. The only two mana planeswalkers they've printed, one was awful because they were too afraid, and the other one is too good because they were making the creature first, and they were a little less afraid.
Okay. Plus one, target opponent mills two, right? So now in two turns, you make your opponent mill four cards, and on the next turn, you can minus two him to draw one card. That's fine. You don't get to draw a card with him until turn three.
Sure, okay.
And he mills four, and then his ultimate is like minus six.
And then that card would be boring, and no one would want it.
I think people would still find a way to play it.
I think that card would be really good because you can minus it to kill it immediately so that Jace gets in the graveyard, and then Tarmogoyf gets plus one, because there's a Planeswalker, and you draw a card out of it.
You can't minus. You can't over minus, can you?
No, you can't. I don't mean... I mean, like, they'd play it for Tarmogoyf.
Yeah, I don't know. Guess. I'm still fascinated by this idea. They will eventually do it. It's just a question.
Actually, that's great with Tarmogoyf, because you plus, and then they mill two, so you make your Tarmogoyf bigger on turn two, and then you minus, and then hopefully hit, and then put a Planeswalker in the graveyard.
Oh, so, yeah, you plus two, and then minus draw a card on turn two?
And then you play, and then, like, on Tarmogoyf, you play on turn two, so your Tarmogoyf is at a minimum, especially if you fetch, could be a 4/5 on turn two.
It's pretty reasonable.
No.
still too good. Yeah, all right.
I can't think of a way that we should ever print a one mana planeswalker.
It'll happen eventually.
It did. And it was too good.
Well, but they also made all of the abilities.
And even had, what?
The problem with Deathrite Shaman, which any of those of you who are like, what is he talking about? And we're talking about Deathrite Shaman, it was just clearly the one mana planeswalker.
So Deathrite Shaman was a one mana, was a card that had three abilities that like...
Hybrid cost black-green for a 1/2 elf shaman, right?
Well,
elf.
The point is that it had three abilities.
And it had three good abilities.
Right, so like... If you don't know this, the original Planeswalker actually is probably the Fire Mage.
Grim Lavamancer?
No. Chandra is like a complete ripoff of her. Her abilities were like, she's a creature, red, tap.
Jaya Ballard Taskmage?
Yeah, Jaya Ballard Taskmage is like where they got a lot of the basis of a Planeswalker from.
Right.
Because it's like small ability that you can do pretty much when you cast her. You get a card that exists. Slightly more expensive one. You get a card that...
Also exists.
Really expensive thing. You get a card that, like, that's kind of how the original Planeswalkers were built.
I think very based on that.
And, like, Chandra Nalar is, like, a blatant copy of her as a character, which the professor, friend of the podcast, did an episode on. Is like, he does these videos where there's Planeswalker cosplayers come in and do stuff.
Sweet. All right.
So let's move on from Planeswalkers.
Yeah. That would be actually a really, really fun exercise.
I'm excited that we have a red-white Planeswalker that's not a Johnny Vengeance, though. Nahiri. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Okay,
she's
just
sweet.
Just for the record, like, I'm just going to throw this out there on this episode, and for those of you who are listening live, with the conversation that we just tried to have about a one mana Jace, would you guys be interested in a conversation about the one mana version, like the one mana design for each of the five main planeswalkers by us? If we were to like have the conversation and legitimately, realistically try to come up with a design that would work for each of them and like discuss them on the podcast. What if Kessler and I even...
You can put that in the comic stream right now and then we would know.
What if Kessler and I even had like a...
Tweeted us at the MMcast.
Like a competition where we had to like come with our best one mana planeswalker design and like battle them out. What do you think about that? That seems kind of fun.
That... Sure.
Yeah. Mine would all be blatantly too good.
I don't think we could battle them out because the challenge is making a planeswalker that's not good, but fun and or valuable and or interesting.
Be super fun.
Because, like, right. I can make a 1 minute Planeswalker that's good.
Yeah. No, I mean, we could do it. Like, I love the idea of aiming.
No, like good is very...
Yeah.
Like, one blue, target player draws 3 cards, minus play every card in your hand for free.
I really do like the idea of a Jace that is comes down on one loyalty. That
has need to get off this Jace conversation. Okay. I'm moving us on. All right, so... Do you have anything else about Shadows of Innistrad? Any predictions? Any things you're hopeful for? Anything that were cool?
It would be nice to see another... Like, I think it would be nice to see another Geist of St. Traft style card. That would be... It would be fun in the way that we've seen, like, they evolve the Delver design with...
What if it's, like, Skulk Geist?
Yeah, I mean, something... It would just be nice to see, like, that card in another form. Because, like, sure. In the way they evolve Delver into a 4-drop... I mean, I'm not saying that you need to make, like... I guess it would be really, really fun if you gave us, like, some sort of 2-mana Geist of St. Traft that put, like, a 1-1 flyer into play or something like that instead of a 4-4 flyer. Like, it'd be less powerful, but it'd be fun to have another card in the same world.
I do want to see... I really hope they do bring back some of the legendary creatures from before.
Right.
So that we get to see kind of what happened to them.
It would also be really fun, actually, just if you could have that 2-mana Geist, because then you could put Steel of the Godhead on a 2-mana Geist as opposed to 3.
Eyes at you.
Yeah.
That one corner case of this one thing, of this one deck that I built one time, that'd be great if you got a slightly better card.
It'd be fun.
But I do think we might get legendary, new versions of each of the legendaries. I think they're all, other than maybe Grimgrim, the other ones are all pretty big fan favorites. I think we'll get a red-green werewolf finally.
Okay.
I think we might get a green-white legendary human for the first time.
Yeah.
Sounds sweet.
Because that was the part of the uncommon cycle that was missing.
It was Mikaeus, and he was just mono white, which was like...
It was weird from a flavor perspective.
Well, it was right on the edge where Wizards wasn't designing for Commander fully yet.
Yeah.
And so, like, that specific one from a flavor perspective was like, oh, this is a little cute thing. But in reality, from gameplay for the rest of history of Magic, like,
no one
remembers Mikaeus.
There was also, like, the cool flavor thing of there was Mikaeus, and then there was also Mare of Avonbrook, which was the half-human lord that turned into a werewolf lord. So you had both halves of it from a design point of view, which was fun. I love Mare of Avonbrook personally. That's actually something...
Yeah, but he's not legendary.
Yeah, right. But okay, but was there a legendary lord for all the other colors?
Mm-hmm. Everything but... So humans had just mono white Mikaeus.
Right.
Red-black vampires had Olivia Valdarin.
Oh.
Black-blue had Grim-Grim.
Right.
The zombie that... I mean, that's probably the least played of these. And then blue-white had Geist. So werewolves didn't have them because they couldn't figure out the mechanics of how a legendary creature would function with a flip card.
Sure.
Which obviously they fixed with the Planeswalkers, I feel like.
I was talking about the uncommon lords. That's the one that I was missing. You had Immerwolf, you had Diregraph Captain, you had
Strom
Kirk Captain, and then you had the spirit one, right?
It was a zombie, a spirit, werewolf, and vampire.
The Hexproof. Yeah.
Vampires had Death Touch, all vampires, and then...
Yeah, but there was no green white uncommon one was the point.
Yeah, but there was the one that there was the yes, you're correct.
That's what I'm saying. So you had like Hamlet Captain, and you had like Mare of Avonbrook. Hamlet Captain
is kind of the thing.
Yeah, but it wasn't as sweet. That's what I'm saying. It would be fun if you printed the green white one now.
Sure.
Yeah, I would love that. Sure.
Cool. All right, so let's move on to deck doctoring since we are currently at the exact halfway point of the podcast.
All right.
Actually, we're over that because there was that moment where we like messed up and the recording was bad.
Right.
All right. So, first ones first.
So these are both submissions specifically from the Patreon.
So the way this is going to work for now on, most likely, unless we decide to not do this way anymore, is the Patreon. People who donate on the Patreon are the people that get the chance to submit their decks. So that's one of the prizes at the $10 mark, or I think the $5, it says it on the Patreon, $5 mark, is if you're a Patreon subscriber and you're donating at least $5, we will do deck doctor episodes probably once a month, and the decks we take will be submissions from the fans. Generally, and this is as a heads up to people that are donating to the Patreon, we most likely will focus more on decks that are slightly creative. So there were a few decks that were kind of just like, here's my version of Grizzlebrand with Jason, you know, Grixis Grizzlebrand, and from our side of the table, that deck is something that almost made the top 8 at the Pro Tour, is kind of an established deck, and so our ability to help tune it and make it something a little bit more powerful isn't going to be as helpful.
Also, though, sometimes, like, feel free to submit anything you want, really.
Yeah.
But sometimes, for sure. And we will sometimes do decks like that, especially if it's, like, particularly relevant, like maybe it was just in a top 8, or maybe, like, it's the deck du jour sort of thing. But also, the flip side of that is, we intend to do this for a while and run the Patreon for quite a while as we sort of develop it and get it going, so... Don't feel, you know, just because you're
true. Sorry, yeah.
don't feel the need to just submit to submit. You know what I mean? Submit something that you're happy with, that you've thought about.
Submit the deck you're playing.
And let us know, because we have, you know, there's some sweet decks in this list, and we just asked today for the first time. So let's do it.
First one. This was submitted by Gabriel Chervatz. This is Black White Death and Taxes.
Yeah, this deck has some spicy stuff in it.
So the thing that really bounced out to me, and we'll go over the list, and I'm actually going to post the link to the list in the Twitch feed.
Okay.
For people that aren't listening. Well, this will be on rocketjump.com in the underscore thing, so if you're listening to this live, check out the list. It's right there. The thing that snuck out to me most was Wasteland Strangler with Tidehauler Scholar.
Yep.
So that's awesome. Because the big flaw of Tidehauler Scholar, because if you guys don't know, it's black and white to Thoughtseize someone.
Right.
But it gets under Tidehauler Scholar, and if Tidehauler Scholar dies, they get the card back.
Right.
But with Wasteland Strangler, you can take it out of exile, put it in the graveyard, and then it's gone forever.
And they don't get it back.
And you now have a 3-2 that gave a creature minus 3 and a 2-2.
Yeah, it definitely seems super, super sweet. I like this deck. This has a lot of cards that I like that are cards that ended up in like Superior Burning Cocoa, like a lot of like 2 and 3, like 2 mana, 3 mana kind of cards. So I'm very familiar and looked at a lot of these cards for different reasons. I would say the things that jump out at, well, okay, so we should go over the list, right? We should actually just talk about the list.
Yes. Okay. So this thing has 27 creatures. First one, new.
Aiel,
Eternal Pilgrim.
Yep.
3 Thalia, Guardian of Thraben. 4 Tidehauler Scholar. 2 Aven Mind Sensor. 1 Eldrazi Displacer, another sweet one.
Yep.
1 Fiend Hunter. 4 Flicker Whiffs. 2 Kitchen Finks. 3 Wall of Resurgence. 3 Wasteland Strangler. 3 Restoration Angel. Path to Exile times 4. 2 Dismember. Aether Vial. And then the lands you would expect.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I guess Darksteel Citadel is sort of a weird one just because you want to combine that with Wall of Resurgence to get the indestructible attackers. But I think this deck is super fun. The first thing that jumps out at me is that I don't know if playing 2 Aven Mind Sensor in a deck that seems pretty heavy on 3 drops is as necessary as just playing Leon and Arbiters on 2. Kind of feels like with the Hate Bears thing.
You're also already black-white, so my opinion on that kind of breaks down to, you don't need to run a fetch land package,
right?
You just don't, and so you might as well take advantage of that and do the, you know, the Ghost Quarter plus
Arbiter
game plan. And Aven Mind Sensor is decent with that, and maybe have them in the side so that you could bring them in one that's a like very good. But right, you're really, really heavy on 3 drops, and I'd rather max out on some of your other 3 drops to kind of just up the strength.
Yeah, because the thing about Arbiter that's so nice is, especially in a deck with Aether Vial, is that you have the ability to play Vial on turn 1 and then look at your lands and go, okay, if I have this Arbiter in hand, I can play my Arbiter now on turn 2, and instead of playing a third land and resolving a 3 drop, I'm going to get to 3 off this Vial. Now I can just aggressively Ghost Quarter your lands. And you're not going to be able to pay because of Arbiter. So it turns the deck into much more of the sort of choking Death and Taxes style. I personally am almost a little bit more of the mind that I would maybe play 3 Arbiters, 2 Thalias, but that's just a personal choice. I don't know how like necessary that necessarily is.
I think you go down to 2 Wall of Resurgence and get rid of the Aven Mind Sensors, and then you play those 3 Arbiters. And I think you play 4 Arbiters.
I think
you find another place in this list somewhere that you can cut a card, maybe on the Kitchen Finks, and move one of them to the side.
I do really, really like Wall of Resurgence here. I think it's super clever.
No, but I think 3 is probably too much, but I think if you're getting 2 of them is decent, because once you get 1, you're going to be able to blink it with Resto Angel or the other Flicker Wisp.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that's super cool. I mean, with the Restoration Angel on the wall, that's like a very fun thing you get to do. Another card that I see as a possibility here is, oh, by the way, Eldrazi Displacer is just sweet. That's awesome. I love seeing Eldrazi Displacer start to pop up in decks.
Another reason Darksteel Citadel, by the way, is really good.
Yeah.
And the Ghost Quarter.
You're saying?
Both, because those cast the
yes.
Wingding mana.
Yeah, absolutely. Wingding mana. So another thing that I think, another card that I think is interesting as a possibility is the card Stonecloaker. 1 white, 2 colorless for a 3-2 flash flying creature. I think it's from Planar Chaos. When it enters the battlefield, return another creature you control to its owner's hand, and then also when it enters the battlefield, exile a card from target player's graveyard. So it's great for a few reasons. Number one, obviously can save one of your creatures in response to a removal spell. So you hold, you hold it back, which is great. There are a lot of like corner cases in Modern where you're going to want to hit a card out of someone's graveyard in response. Somebody tries to like Kolaghan's Command and get back their Snapcast or something like that.
Grizzle Band decks doing the Grizzle Brand thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons that you need to be able to take out a graveyard. I mean, that's you don't have access to Scavenging Ooze here, which is the usual index like this.
Sure.
So I think it's good. And then also the fact that it has Flash, Exile, and then it puts a card into Exile. So for your Strangler, it adds that added element of your Wasteland Strangler's coming in, having a card to process.
Right. One of the reasons we are saying to cut down a little bit on the through drops is that the one thing I want to increase are like up Wasteland Strangler to 4. I think that card's really good with some of the cards you're playing. It does really cute things with what you're trying to do. Same as upping your 2 drops just in general, because this deck is already really high, and I actually think you can probably get away with 2 Eldrazi Displacers. It's already a 3/3 for 3, and that's so decently costed.
Yeah.
That then getting that blink effect where almost every other card in your deck does something really cool by blinking it, and it's, you know, it kind of does a bad Maze of Ith effect. Like, it does so many good things that this kind of deck kind of could possibly want that I love this in this deck.
I like this placer a lot. The last bit, sorry, that I forgot of with the Sculler with Stonecloaker.
Sure.
Is that when you have an active Vial, there's a trick you can do with Tidehollow Sculler where when the exile triggers on the stack, if you can return Sculler to your hand, you permanently exile the card so they don't ever get it back. So because Sculler costs 2, Vial costs 1, and Stonecloaker costs 3, I know from experience with, Coco Dex, you're going to flash in Sculler on 3, and you'll have 3 mana the same turn to hit your Stonecloaker, which means you can play your third land, put your second counter on Vial, wait for their draw step, flash in Sculler during draw step, just like you would with a click, and once you've seen their hand, actually cast Stonecloaker, exiling a bouncing Sculler back to your hand and then permanently exiling the card, whatever card they drew, before they can cast it. Which, as corner cases that actually seems, is not as bad as you think, because you're going to get to recast Sculler again and exile another card the next turn.
Well, something else you can do with Sculler, and like this is also true with Fiendhunter, which is why I like the one of Fiendhunter in the deck, is you can use, if you have 6 mana, which obviously is a problem to get to, but Eldrazi Displacer can blink it, and then when it comes back into play, blink it in response to the trigger so that you permanently exile the creature.
Yep.
So stuff like that's fun. Also, that's why Wasteland Strangler is sweet. Gets rid of it. Something I was thinking about doing, and I don't have specific cards for it, so I'm going to look them up, but doing more of a displacer game plan, or more of a processor game plan with cards like Fiendhunter and like Tidehauler Scholar.
Right.
I was even thinking maybe going blue-black white and adding maybe events around the top end, because that does can blink anything until end of turn, or that might be only your creatures. I might be wrong there. Never mind. But a lot of the blue processes are really good. Some of the black ones. Go with that game plan. Sweet. So yeah, that's what I got. I mean, we'll post a list of what we think the deck might look like with our changes to Rocket Jump when we post the episode.
Yeah. You also the other thing you can think about in this deck is, depending on what the meta looks like at the time, main decking a couple spell guides in here is not the worst thing. Like, they cost 2. They're on curve. Like, they block really well. And so many of your things in this deck have to do with bouncing. Like, the cards themselves are good, but also you can get kind of blown out by, like, going for it with some of your Enter the Battlefield triggers and what you're trying to get out of them. That if they exile a creature or kill a creature in response to your trigger, you get kind of like, I don't know, it's just not as sweet. So having Spellskite on the table to counteract some kind of clever removal is not a bad thing.
Sure.
Also, I mean, you definitely have some weaker creatures. So like you could play just like a couple pieces of equipment. I don't think it would be the worst thing. At which point, Spellskite becomes even easier and even better to play. You could play a couple swords or something like that. I mean, I don't know. It's a thought.
Sure.
Yeah. Might be a little loose. Anyway, let's move on.
All right. So that's it for that deck. Thank you
to
the submitter, where I'm getting to your name. I apologize.
We've butchered your name literally every time.
Gabriel.
Charvat. Charvat? Yes.
Yeah.
Gabriel Charvat. Thank you for submitting. Thank you
very much for the list. It's really sweet. I liked some of the cool things it was doing. That's why I picked it.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
All right, so next. This deck is from Edward Killian and his son.
Oh, yeah. Edward Killian.
So they submitted Mono Green Blink, and one of their comments was that people have told us, but we're gonna deck tech it. And
wait,
tell
it's
you
called
about
mono
it.
Green blink.
Yep.
Why is it called that?
Because it blinks mono green cards.
Does it?
Yeah. Where'd it go? I had it. I lost it.
Oh, because of Conjurer's Closet.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah. Okay.
Looking for the card there. Okay. No.
Yep, we're struggling here.
Sorry, everybody. Yep, found it. All right, cool. Mono green blink. So the way this deck is currently laid out, there are 23 creatures: 4 Acidic Slime, 4 Arbor Elf, 2 Elvish Mystic, 2 Hornet Queen, 2
Colonian
Twin Grove, 4 Sacra Chibelder, 2 Sylvan Primordial, 3 Thrag Tusk, 3 Cultivate, 3 Genesis Wave, 2 Harrow, a bunch of forests. A Conjurer's Closet.
4 Conjurer's Closet.
And a Voyager Staff.
2 Voyager Staff. I know that card.
And 4 Utopia Sprawl.
Yes, Voyager Staff from Ravnica. That's the, yeah, it's the single blink. I think it blinks a single creature. And Conjurer's Closet is the, like, 5 mana, I think, artifact that blinks a creature end of turn every turn.
Yes.
Right? So yeah, it's pretty clear what this deck's trying to do. You have some awesome cards in Hornet Queen and Colonian Twin Grove and Thrag Tusk that are just like excellent value and just like get tons of things. I know in the description here, the message was that they're very aware that Primeval Titans would be better.
I don't know how much I love Primeval Titan in this deck, actually. So
just because getting lands is like whatever.
Yeah, like I really like how this is just going to be like, I think you want to max out on some of your power cards, though. I think you want to play 4 Hornet Queen. I think you want to play 4 Thrag Tusk.
Yeah.
I just think those are just going to be stronger. I also like love the Acidic Slime plan. I love the Genesis Wave plan of just bringing all this stuff in here. I also think there's a brand new card, and that's one of the reasons I picked this. I do think you need to go to white. Just like, you're going to get better blink cards than Conjurer's Closet, but in white, you get Eerie Interlude.
Which is the same card as Ghostway, right?
It's 2 and a white. Exile any number of target creatures you control. Return those creatures to the battlefield under their owner's control at the beginning of the next end step.
Is Ghostway, it puts them back in immediately, and I think it's all creatures instead of targets, right?
Yes.
That's the difference? I'll look it up. You keep talking.
All right. So one of the reasons, this plus something like Restoration Angel are the two, and maybe Flicker Wisp, like all three of those, similar to the deck that we were previously talking about. All three of them together could do a lot of work.
Ghostway is each, but it's still end of turn. So it can't be thwarted, though, by redirecting targets to a Spellskite, which is relevant.
Okay. But so like one of the reasons I say this, I think you also want to max out on Elvish Mystics.
Right.
Just to like up that level. Obviously, this is a little bit meant to be more of a cost-effective brew.
Yeah.
But I think eventually you're just going to be able to start casting Genesis Waves, and it's going to be epic.
Yeah, for a million mana. I'm also, and this was just like something I thought of that might be kind of silly. If you go to 8 one-drop accelerants in the deck, like 4 Arbor Elf and 4 Elvish Mystic, I don't mind the idea of replacing some of your lands because you're playing so much ramp with that Chancellor of the Tangle card from New Phyrexia. I think he's a 6/7 reach for like 3 green, 4 colorless. But if you have him in your opening hand, you can reveal him, and during your first main phase, add 1 green. So he's a free green mana if he's in your opening hand. And if you were gonna play like, say, just like a couple, I don't know, like, and yet also, you know, the other thing you could think of is that instead of playing Cultivates, you could consider playing like Rampant Growth or something like that. Which is a worse card, but it's cheaper. If you were going to go with this sort of like turbo, let's get up to 5 mana to cast Thrag Tusk as fast as possible kind of a thing. Because I love the idea of revealing this guy and rampant growthing on turn 1 and not costing you a card. That sounds kind of fun to me.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, it might be, I don't know how like awesome that actually is.
I don't know
how
much of a good like a 6/7 is. That's my one fear, is like, even if you get to like Genesis Wave into play later.
Yeah.
Like where I would definitely be trying, and maybe the new card isn't the correct thing, but I do like Flicker Wisp and Restoration Angel and just playing a green white plan. I don't think you need to like up on your expensive lands. I think there are enough inexpensive green white lands that you can get away with doing a slightly cheaper build than you normally would.
Yeah. And you can just play Sun Petal Grove. You can play like Sun Petal Grove and like, what would be the other like most like budget modern green?
What's the best way to get to 5 mana from in green? Is it Harrow? Turn 3? Is it like?
Well, okay, so like if you can play a turn 2 Harrow, then you can play a turn 3 5 mana spell. So okay, if like Elf and
like
Harrow.
I think this deck needs to be able to consistently get to turn 5 Thrag Tusk and turn 3 Thrag Tusk, turn 3. Acidic Slime. I think that's like the main game plan, because once you get there, you're going to be able to get to the Hornet
Queen, and all those things. So like your game plan kind of just starts going off at that point. Those are the two cards I think you need to be able to do.
I also don't hate the idea of, okay, just bear with me here. This might be like kind of crazy, but what if you go green, white, and then you get, go green, white, you play four of the green, white pain land, right?
Okay.
You play what there has to be some green lands, some untapped green lands that also produce colorless, right? Like, are there any?
Yeah, there's the green, white one, the pain lands.
I just said that. Aside from that, like what are other lands? Because I'm just thinking
the filter land, but that's expensive. But yeah, the filter land exists.
Okay, so like, what if you were to play, you were to go with this whole plan of you add in white, you play Chancellor of the Tangle, and you play like Rampant Growth Effects, right? So scrap your Cultivates, but oh, Tribelder, you're already playing Tribelder, turn one Tribelder off the same plan.
Sure.
So you're setting up a situation where if you can play Rampant Growth on turn one, you can get to, you can consistently count on getting to a turn 3/4 mana spell. Which means you could play Thought Knotseers in here. I like the idea.
Oh, I like Thought Knotseers in this here a lot. Right? I also thinking about it, adding white, I almost want to say this is another deck that Eldrazi Displacer would be really good in. Mm. Eldrazi Displacer, the deck tech episode.
I mean, Displacer is just awesome.
That card's so good. And like, because just imagine displacing, you're already playing those colors, you're already trying to do Thought Knotseer. You can play a single Waste. So you can find it with Sacra Tribelder as well.
Yeah. What about for the heavy drops? So scrap Chancellor plan on this idea, but what about for the heavy drops?
I like the Chancellor plan. I think, but I like the Thought Knotseer Displacer plan.
I think like you can get clever with Chancellor, so don't rule that out. Like, don't listen to Kessler just like being a hater, because I think that, I'm not saying it's great, but like it's definitely one of these things where you're playing a bunch of big, beefy green things, and you're going to get to seven pretty fast. So the added advantage of speed, if you go that plan of having four of those in your deck, could be... You might find yourself in a situation where you can design this to be way more aggressive. And look, getting an extra free mana on turn one because you have a 6/7 later in the game when you're going to get to 7 mana pretty quickly is not the worst thing. Like, it makes you really aggressive. But what I was going to say was...
Well, this deck's not trying to be aggressive. This deck's trying to get to its... Because, like, that's what kind of my point is that you only have 8/1 drops that are... And they're okay when you play them on turn one. I mean, they're really good. They're elves that play on turn one, and classically, they've been good for the history of Magic, but... I'd rather see stuff like Wall of Omens in there. Like, just like put like the five white cards added to the really powerful green cards that are here already.
Okay. What if you go Search for Tomorrow in here? And
yeah, I like Search for Tomorrow. Okay. I like upping the ramp to Search for Tomorrow. So
now you go Search for Tomorrow's.
I still don't like Tangle.
Why not? Like, think about, okay, now
it just makes the deck really inconsistent, and your payoff is sometimes you'll be a little faster, but most of the time it's just you're gonna draw it on turn five when you'd rather draw any other card and just be like, oh, this does nothing. Even when you cast it, it just comes into play and it's just a 6/7 dirtily green dude. When, like, I'd rather on 7 mana be casting Hornet Queens.
Yeah, but obviously you're not playing it because he's a 6/7. The fact that he is a 6/7 and you're playing mono green right now is what makes him actually good in this deck, because you'll be able to cast the 6/7 later, but he's going to give you 2 mana on turn
but
one.
Then I'd almost rather just play the full 12 elves. So you play Elvish Mystic, Llanowar Elf, and the green-white one that... lets you
the one from Innistrad.
The one that produces a white and is a green.
Okay, but those guys all die to sweepers and also don't turn into 6/7s later. This guy is an extra mana on turn one to ramp, to organically ramp. Like, Tribelder on turn one is very good. Like, that's awesome. That's really good. It means, like...
Really good is debatable. I'd say he's good, though.
Okay, whatever. Anyway, I think it's sweet, but...
That card is better when you are dealing with a world of cards that affect... Like, it's a combo card.
Yeah, I get that. Last thing I was going to say is, on the high end, I like Avenger of Zendikar in this deck. I think it's sweet. I think Avenger of Zendikar is really good. It's like...
So someone did ask this. Deck Durko... Oh, Durkoak.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Hey, how's it going?
How's it going? We know you.
I know you. I think that's in there. I think that's in the list. He was asking if the Utopia Sprawl package would be really good in this set.
Four of them, yeah.
There are four, and it is playing four Arbor Elves. So that's definitely part of what this deck is trying to do.
Yeah.
Which is important to keep in mind. I actually do like that, and we did kind of pass over that.
Utopia Sprawl, really, that makes me think about playing Garrick. I love Garrick. Wildspeaker.
Ooh, I do love Garrick.
Because you can untap the Utopia Sprawl lands and get double up. And also he's a 4-drop, which means
pretty expensive.
Tribe Elder gets you to 4/3. Seems really good.
Plus it makes all your 1/1s really good. Yeah, you should be playing Garrick in this deck. At least as a 1/1.
Avenger of Zendikar. I said it. Let me say it. So,
Avenger of Zendikar. I think Avenger of Zendikar is a much better thing than Primeval Titan or Sylvan Primordial.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's cheap right now because you can just get him out of the dual deck.
Yeah, he's super cheap. And that's to
and
me,
that dual deck has like really good cards. Oh, yeah. You get the manland, green white manland. There's a card that's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, there's so many good green white lands.
Yeah, Avenger of Zendikar comes to mind for me. So if you were to go with Garrick in this deck and then play Avenger of Zendikar, it sets you up in the situation where all of your 0/1s now turn into like you could like the turn there's like a situation where you can like play Garrick, untap, play something like you can your 0/1s all get overrun with Garrick pretty quickly. Like, I think that sounds sweet.
No, I think the Garrick plan's really good.
Yeah, Garrick's good. Yes.
Okay, so that's counter changes. Once again, this list will be posted on to rocketjump.com. We'll actually also post our version of the list. They'll have small changes, and me and Ben will probably argue over the inclusion of a card that I don't think should be in the deck.
It might not be good. I don't know. I'm just saying it's interesting.
Otherwise, you know. Check that and the other list. Both will be there. In the meantime, our wonderful Twitch stream provided us with a 1-mana Jace that they thought would be worthwhile.
Oh, really?
And I haven't even read it, but this is from Zemiphobic.
Okay.
He's afraid of Zemis.
Oh, sweet.
Jace the Lone Telepath. 1 blue, Planeswalker, Jace. +1, target creature gets -1/-0 until start of your next turn. 0, scry 1. -2, target creature can't block until end of turn.
Oh, it's like a tempo guard kind of. And it has scry 1/0.
I don't hate this. I like that it's a 0. I do think that you want an alt.
Yeah, I think it's too hard to make a planeswalker without an alt. I mean, I guess if you were... Oh, it doesn't have any plus abilities, right?
It does. The first one's a plus.
Oh, I'm blind.
No, gotcha. I do think it's a minus. Okay. That was fun.
Yeah, that's sweet. All right.
We don't need to talk about Jace the 1-mana planeswalker. Ever again.
I want to all the time. Next week, we'll talk about Nissa, the 1-mana planeswalker.
So yeah, that's it for the episode, right? Do we have anything else? Cool. Yeah, I want to thank everyone for the Patreon for donating. That's the reason we were able to do this live. Hopefully being live isn't too weird for the podcast. We actually are at a level where we'll have a bonus episode. So this Friday, we'll be releasing our review over what the GP was this weekend. Eldrazi Winter is in full swing.
Yeah.
I disagree with...
Prepare for the banning.
Some things. the banning will be happening. I hope you guys had a good time. Thank you, all the people that are watching live right now. We had between 15 and 18 people the whole time, so that's pretty sweet. And yeah. Thank you guys online. Remember to follow us on Twitter at the MMCast.
Yeah, because we'll be doing these live streaming with some frequency now. And so when we do them, if you follow us on Twitter, we'll like next time we'll know like specifically the time and all that. Like we'll give it like a day ahead of time.
20 minutes, yeah.
Well, and we'll just give it a day ahead of time.
Sure.
Work on figuring this thing out. So next time we'll have like the official MMCast Twitch stream. We'll start that. We'll give you guys the heads up a day beforehand.
As people that were watching this time around, there were some technical difficulties.
Yeah. And so what I'm saying is follow us on at the MMCast so you know when we're going live next time and you can get in on the action.
Yeah.
But thanks for those of you that did listen this time. This was really fun.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. I'm at Kes Wiley on Twitter. We didn't do that part.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media, and I wanted to throw out something really quickly that we forgot to do. We didn't really forget. It's going to be the end of the podcast. Kessler was in Detroit over the weekend. He went to the GP, and we love Spellskite on this podcast.
We do.
And there was a special Spellskite playmat that was like an exclusive at the tournament. You had to like be in like some sort of special area or like win something. I'm not exactly sure how because it wasn't the main playmat.
So what it was is... At GPs, they generally have the main event playmat, which is the one you get, and that was Ancient Grudge. It was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
And then they also have a VIP playmat. So if you pay for the big VIP price, you get that playmat. It's also something that you can get by playing in a lot of these side events.
And win, yeah.
It's one of the awards, but you only get it if you win it. So Bronson Wetzel,
yeah,
all-star.
Like this is, go tell the story, because this is the single coolest thing. I'm just going to say right now. This is the single coolest thing that's happened to me as I've like worked in Magic Media. And then on top of that, as someone who works in entertainment media, this might be the single coolest thing that's ever happened to me since I've worked in entertainment or sports media. Like, I don't know that I've ever felt as excited about something that's happened to me. Like, this is amazing.
So, literally, I'm walking around talking to Ben 5 minutes before, and we're like, oh, there's a spell schematic, sweet, how are we gonna get it? And I'm like, we're just not, it's not gonna happen. And then like I'm watching some of the top tables play, he like lost his land and there's some commotion, and just talking to my friend, kind of explaining what's happening, because I was with a friend that doesn't play Magic, he lives in Detroit, and Bronson comes up and is like, hey, are you Alex Kessler from the Masters of Modern? And I was like, yeah. And then he was like, oh man, I love the show, everything, and it was really nice. I said hello, I thanked him, and then he was like, I have this mat for you. And I was like, I didn't believe. I was like, wait, you're saying I can have this? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, that's amazing. And then like out of his bag, he's like, and I have one for Ben.
I was like
a tear rolled down my eye.
Yeah, like the coolest thing ever. Like I was like, so, and not only is it amazing that we were gifted these by Bronson, but on top of that, I think it's the coolest playmat that I've ever seen. Like the card Spell Sky, it's kind of a weird looking card on the card. It's hard to kind of see what's really going on. Blown up, the thing is terrifying.
It's got this awesome grin, just like
it feels like a combination of like an H.R. Geiger alien and like the card Energy Chamber or something.
Oh, it definitely feels like a Xenomorph. It's the most like Xenomorph-like card.
Yeah.
Which is alien from Aliens.
Yeah. It's some orb of power being hugged by like the... It's like the alien queen in Aliens when she's like birthing, except it's like an orb of power. I don't know. Amazing. The coolest thing. Thank you so much. We would never expect anything like that from any of you guys. We do the content because we love to do it, and it's amazing that some of you have contributed, and that is like above and beyond. So thank you so much. I hope you're listening to this. We love you, and if you see me at a GP, which you will later this year if you're there, I will be playing with my Spellskite playmat. Absolutely. I played with it the very next day at the Highlander tournament.
Yeah. Thank you all guys for thank you all for watching, listening, and hanging out. We'll be doing this once a month, and there'll be a bonus episode in this week.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.